about half the committee saying that they're late. There's some backup caused by Representative Holberg coming in on the accident on the highway. But they'll be here momentarily, and so we'll get started, and I'll gavel in once we have a quorum. Representative Johnson has graciously agreed to start us out with his House file 2017, and it may be that there's some additional explanation required from Representative Johnson once other members get here. As for now, members should know that an amendment was submitted by Representative Johnson. It did not meet the 24-hour deadline, but I told him the committee would consider it without objection from the members. Hearing no objection, Representative Johnson, please take your place at the testifier's table and get started on explanation for your bill 2017. As it stands, members should know that the motion on these bills will be to refer, and the referral on this bill 2017 will be to Public Safety Finances. Isn't that right, Representative Paymar?
That's correct.
Okay. Representative Johnson, to your bill. And if you can, along with that, please also explain the amendment.
Mr. Chair, first of all, the amendment that I have was brought to my attention by the Automobiles Manufacturing Association. This amendment just changes the definition a little bit to conform with the federal definition, so it's easier for the manufacturing company.
Go ahead, Representative Johnson.
So I'm hoping that you'll accept the amendment.
Hopefully it was right.
Okay. Well, in order to do that, we'd need to vote on it, Representative Johnson. I believe we do have quorum now, so what I'm going to do is call the committee to order. And if I have a motion to approve the minutes from February 28th, I have a motion to approve the minutes. So Representative Liebling moves the February 28th minutes. January 28th, thank you. We haven't gotten to February 28th yet, as far as I know. All in favor of the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, say no. Motion passes. Minutes for January 28th are approved. And we will first vote on, what's the name of the amendment? Representative Johnson's amendment? Is it A1? Representative Johnson's A1 amendment to House File 2017. In order to get the bill in the shape the author so desires, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, say no. Motion passes. So, Representative Johnson, to your bill as amended.
Okay, this bill deals with the data event recorders that are in 94% of the vehicles out on the road today. A lot of people aren't aware that there is a data recorder or a black box that's in their cars unless you read your manufacturer's policy manual that's in your glove box. What this bill deals with is the data that's that's kept in the data recorder. Different manufacturers use it from accidents and also checking. It originally started making sure seatbelts were being deployed properly. Since that time, the amount of information in there has grown exponentially. And last year, when I originally offered this bill, we found out, because of some reading I was doing, I found out that NTSB is looking at making these data recorders GPS capable. Right now, for accident reconstruction, there's about 12 seconds of data that's used in them and that is saved, 6 seconds before the crash, 2 seconds during the crash, and 4 seconds after the crash, and which is used for the reconstruction of accidents. Right now, there's no rules on whether the information in that is public or private, and I myself have been involved up to, at one time, a month and a half after an accident, going and ripping out the black box so the information could be obtained for the accident reconstruction. My big concern is if they're making these GPS capable, the question I ask myself is, why do they need GPS for 12 seconds? They don't. So this is a way that eventually some people could tap into your black box, whether it's law enforcement or the private, and find out where you've been, where you're going, what you're doing. I'm concerned about that, and I'm trying to take a proactive move to protect that information. Unfortunately, as we've found down here, a lot of times we're reacting to circumstances. I'm trying to get this so we're being one step ahead of the game, which I think is important. The other thing, that issue that my previous bill on this side that I had to change dealt with the accident reconstruction, because warrants are required in this bill, except on a couple circumstances, and I did my best to work out some issues with the State Patrol on that. This bill allows the reconstruction to obtain that information during a serious injury or a fatal car accident where accident reconstruction is needed without consent of the owner or a warrant, only if there's articulable reason that the information could be lost during the recovery of the vehicle, and an explanation of how that can happen if the vehicle is down a deep ravine and it's difficult to get that vehicle back up on the road and recovered, where a cable could break or the vehicle could roll down and crash a second time, that'd be how that information could be lost. But other than that, the main thing is to protect the information. One thing I looked at as well, if the vehicle is GPS capable. I used to be a narcotics officer. Unfortunately, I know how narcotic officers think, and that if it's GPS enabled and I knew had a suspect and wanted to find out where he's been, all I'd have to do is take my little iPad, plug it into the vehicle, and I'd know where that vehicle has been for probably a year or more. And I'd be able to look up data without and obtain evidence without a search warrant. With that, I'm up for any questions.
Questions for the author. Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Representative, first of all, I never knew about this, so thanks for bringing this and opening up this discussion. I think it's a really important one. I just had a question on the bill language. Looking at the last page on the part on prohibition on destruction of data, and I don't know, maybe this is going to public safety or judiciary or something. Maybe this will be dealt with there, so maybe we don't have to beat this too much. But you've got this misdemeanor that, you can't, no person shall knowingly alter or delete the data after an accident of certain kinds, unless a reasonable amount of time for a peace officer to obtain a search warrant has passed, and then it's a misdemeanor. I'm just a little concerned that that's a pretty vague standard when you're going to attach criminal penalties to it. And again, this is really probably more for another committee, so we don't have to fix it here. But I just want to sort of flag that for you as a concern that I would have. I just wouldn't want you to. If somebody's going to be charged with a misdemeanor for destroying the data in the recorder, I can just see a lot of debate over what a reasonable amount of time was. I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Can you work with Representative Liebling on that between now and your next committee?
I would be glad to do that, and I'm glad you brought that up. It's something that I missed going through this.
Where's this call?
Questions from members?
Yeah.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, my understanding is that if the recorder was installed after the manufacturer or dealer sold the vehicle, then that is an exception to this. Is that correct?
Representative Johnson.
And if so, why would that be?
Okay, that I have to admit that was something I missed. This law was fashioned after the Colorado law, which has been around for a number of years.
Okay.
And I will also get that struck out as well.
I just wondered what the Mr. Chair. I just wondered what the reasoning for it was.
At one time, going back from my law enforcement career, vehicles didn't have data recorders, and people had with car manufacturers had some installed after the vehicles were manufactured to, at the start of the process, working with, find out why seatbelts were deploying before they were supposed to. So it goes back to back in the 70s when they first started putting them in the vehicle.
Okay.
Representative Scott?
I'm good.
Representative Hobart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me on page 2, lines 24 and 25, why that language is in there?
Representative Johnson, is that the question we just covered?
Yeah.
I believe that was the question we just covered.
Okay. He's going to work on that, Representative Holberg, because of Representative Scott's question.
I'm sorry, I missed it. And then I have one additional question, or maybe it's more a comment, on lines 33 and 34. If you're really trying to protect people's privacy, I can see there's always a balance with safety. But I'm not sure that a person's privacy should fall below traffic management. So I'd really urge you to take a look at that. I mean, maybe it makes sense in vehicle safety or security, and I don't know what security means, but traffic management, I think back to the mileage study with MnDOT and that whole issue, and I really don't want to be in a position where the event recorder data is being used, similar to the study that MnDOT did.
Representative Johnson?
I believe is an unfortunate addition from the Colorado law where they used the information for a study at one time, and that will also be removed.
Other questions from members? Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Representative Johnson, you keep talking about the Colorado law. Could you give us an idea, did you just take this from the Colorado law? Is this something that you're working on with some groups, or did you just wake up and say, gee, Colorado's doing something, we should do it? Or, you know, could you just explain sort of how we're getting to this bill today?
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, last year when I first started this bill, I worked with Matt Gearing on this, and he's the one who, I believe it was the Colorado law that he found that tried to work through it. And I think there's a number of other states that also had this as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair. And, have you... you know, that being the case, if there are several states that have this, do you have any information from them, or have you talked to anybody in those states about how well this has been working? I mean, I hear what Representative Holberg is saying, and, obviously if this is somebody else's language, they have been using this for some purposes, and I guess if there are models out there, it would be kind of good to know how they're working.
Representative Johnson?
I myself have not talked to them. For me, I've picked the law enforcement aspect of it, what could be the negative effects of it, and then trying to protect the private data of the citizens of Minnesota. And this one actually looked fairly well to me to protect that data that's out there to make sure that it's not used improperly.
Any other questions from members? Seeing none, then the motion will be to refer this bill, House File 2017 as amended, to Public Safety Finance. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Moving again to the front end of the agenda. Is Representative Dean here?
Yep.
Sure he is. There he is. Okay. Representative Dean, this first bill that we have for consideration is the Senate Companion File for House File 276. Members, we already had a full hearing on this in committee last session. The House file was referred out of civil law to the General Register, but not acted upon by the full House. Therefore, it comes back here. The Senate file passed the Senate. The House gave it a first reading and referred it to this committee. So we're laying aside House File 276 and instead acting on the Senate file. Representative Dean, you have an author's amendment, the A1 amendment, is that right? To the it replaces Senate language with the original House language from this bill?
Yes.
Okay. in order to, Chair moves the A1 amendment in order to get the bill in the shape, A12, thank you, A12, in order to get the bill in the shape the author desires. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no.
No.
Motion passes. Oh, Representative Holbrooks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm looking at this, and I'm not, it doesn't, if you look at the amendment that just passed, like on page 2, line 30, it only deletes on page 2 to lines 31, and it leaves a little remnant or similar resolutions. It also inserts page 1 after line 6, and then later on it deletes everything after line 7. So I don't know if the structure of the amendment is correct and how it relates to the base document. Maybe Mr. Gearing can help us here, but...
Mr. Gearing, can you help us out with that?
Why would we leave that remnant of that half a line on page 2, line 32?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, the intent of the amendment is to delete all of the existing language in the Senate file and to replace it with the House language. So it looks like we had some sort of numbering error in the drafting. But the intent is to replace the entirety of the Senate file language with what's contained in House File 276, Representative Dean's bill.
So, Representative Holbrook, can you refer to which line on the A12 amendment you're referring to?
Okay, on the A12 amendment, page 2, line 30, it tells us that we're going to delete everything from lines 1 to 31 on page 2 of the Senate file. So it leaves line 32, or similar resolutions, and I don't know why we are leaving that in there. And then if you look at, if you go to the front page of the A12 amendment, it starts after line 6, insert, so it would leave the remnant on page 1, line 7, the First Amendment. But later on in the amendment, A12, it tells us to delete lines 7 to 23.
So, Representative Holbrook, so if we were to say going to go back and if there was a drafting error on this and correct it, my best guess would be on the A12 amendment on line 2.30 to delete the last one and replace it with a 2. Okay, I have some proposed language that would fix this from Mr. Gearing. So the chair would move reconsideration of the A12 amendment as just passed. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed say no. Motion passes. So the A12 amendment is back on the table, and the chair moves, and I'll have you, if there's questions, direct to Mr. Gearing. We'll see if this corrects your keen-sighted concern, Representative Holbrook. On line 2.29, delete the 7 to 23 and replace it with 8 to 24. On line 2.30, delete the 1 at the end of the line and replace it with a 2. On line 2.31, delete the 2 at the end of the line and replace it with a 4. Let's see if you have that down, Representative Holbrook, and it comports with your understanding of ensuring the drafting is correct. I mean, it may be kind of complicated to do that now, but if you're comfortable with it, let me... Representative Holbrook.
If I might, is what we're trying to do here is to do a delete all with the title on page 2 of the amendment and then the body of the language, and nothing in this document remains. Is that what we're trying to do?
Representative Dean, and in fact, when I have Mr. Gary, why don't you go ahead on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, yes, that's the practical intent.
And
because the resolution, the revisor doesn't allow us to delete all amendments for some reason, so we had to do this page and line, but the effect of the amendment is to delete everything from the Senate file and put in the language of the House file. So it's a delete everything amendment, yes.
Representative Holbrook?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and that helps as far as knowing what language we're actually going to try and consider here, and I'm not sure I followed all your page and number references, but if Matt Gearing made the suggestion of which numbers to change. I'm guessing that's right.
Professor Hulbert, I think I can speak for the whole committee when saying that this place will miss you. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a reason why we're trying to save lines 1 through 7 when it looks to me like when you come on to the amendment, when you go 233 to 239, it looks like it's similar language? We're not going to repeat lines 1 to 7, are we?
Is that a question for Mr. Gearing, Representative Howe?
Either the chair or
Mr. Gearing, why don't you go ahead and take a crack at
it? Mr. Chair, Representative Howe, on page 2, line 32 of the amendment, we delete the title and insert a new title. So everything on line 1.1 to 1.7 of the bill will be deleted and replaced with the title as contained in the amendment.
So, thank you. Other questions? Okay, seeing no other questions, then the orally amended A12 amendment is back on under consideration. All in favor of the amended A12 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, say no.
No.
Motion passes. Thank you, Representative Dean, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill is back before you as amended. To move forward, it is a resolution that asks Congress to put forward an amendment to the states regarding Citizens United, which the Supreme Court heard several years ago. There's been 16 other states that have passed language that has requested a constitutional amendment in this regard, and there are many other states that currently have pending language in place as well. The intent, of course, is to have Congress put forward this amendment to the United States that would overturn Citizens United. And for those of you who don't know, back in 1971, I believe it was the 26th Amendment, could be wrong on that, the states did similar amendments related to the voting age and actually got Congress to change the voting age from 21 years old to 18 years old. So it's been a while since we've done something like this, albeit that the 70s were the 1970s, not the 1870s. So this is back before you today for consideration, and I actually do have a testifier today and would like him to come up at this point, if the testifier
would come forward, please. I would note, Representative Dean, we've already heard this entire identical language, so I really don't want to take a lot of time on this, but Representative Hulbert.
Thank you, Mr.
And testifier, come
Chair,
forward.
Chair, I'm a little confused. Maybe you can help. We've had a long tradition in the House of members not having to vote for resolutions that come to the floor just as a resolution. Mm-hmm. So now when we've amended this back, is this a situation where we're bringing a resolution to the floor? Or it seems I don't have a lot of memory of bills being resolutions. So if somebody could address that issue. And then if you know, how many states have passed resolutions for constitutional convention on the 10th Amendment issue as well, because it's my understanding that once you have a constitutional convention, all issues can be discussed.
So as to your first question, Representative Holberg, I mean, I don't have a member of the Chief Clerk's Office here, so anyone who has, and I am obviously aware of the same practice in the House of not being required to vote on resolutions as you are, Representative Holberg, but I'm not sure of the specifics you have. So if any other member wants to respond to that and understand it's a different way, feel free. But as to the second half of the question, Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, as I mentioned, there is 16 other states that have passed language. It does not include the language regarding the Constitutional Convention. Currently, Maine is considering similar language in their resolution to Congress. So, you know, again, it would take 34 states to pass similar language, and if you do the math, it might be a little difficult to get there within the 7-year time period we have attached to this resolution. However, it is possible that if, you know, the remaining states do pass similar language that includes the Constitutional Convention, that other states could go back and pass similar language to call for that. And I believe you are correct that, you know, once a constitutional convention is called, all things are open for conversation and discussion, and ultimately it then has to, again, whatever is passed at that convention has to come back to the states to be ratified.
Mr. Holbert?
I just appreciate the information. I don't know if Mr. Gehring, he's if there's anybody or any of our legal beagles at the table want to comment on this, what I think is a somewhat new practice of putting resolutions in bill form.
Mr. Chair?
I don't know. Representative Paymar.
The way I read it, I could be wrong on this, but we're not voting on a resolution. We're voting on a bill asking Congress to vote on a resolution. So that's what we're voting on. And so your original statement is accurate, that members don't have to vote on resolutions, but we're voting on a bill asking Congress to vote on, to take the resolution up. So that's the way I read it.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if that's the case, Representative Paymar, then why on line 1.12 does it say, be it resolved by the legislature of the state of Minnesota? Could you clarify that for me?
Where are you reading, Mr. Chair?
Line 1.12. I can read it for you. It says, line 1.12 says, be it resolved by the legislature of the state of Minnesota that it requests Congress. If this is a bill, then why does it say it's a resolution? I'm just confused. Can you help me on my confusion, please?
I'll just make it more confusing, Mr. Chair. It's requesting Congress to do it. It's not asking the legislature to approve the resolution. That's the way I read it. And maybe that's a fine line, but... The legislature requests Congress to propose an amendment.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just before I forget, I'd like to have a roll call on this.
Roll call has been requested. Any other questions for Representative Dean? And I can't recall, Representative Holbrook, did this question come up last year, this question that you you posed?
Mr. Chair, I don't recall sitting in on a hearing of this bill, so I don't know if I even was in the room when this bill was heard last time. I hate to admit that, but...
Fair enough. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if Mr. Gehring could clear up some of this for us, since we seem to be throwing ideas around, but maybe an expert should actually tell us something.
Mr. Gehring, are you an expert?
Mr. Chair, no. So the question about whether you need to vote on it or not, I think, is a question probably most appropriately directed to the chief clerk, because he's going to tell you whether you need to vote on it or not.
So,
but Mary is getting a copy of the House rules, so we can take a look at exactly what the rule says.
Representative Holbrook, is your question not about whether or not you have to vote on this on the House floor, but whether you guys who don't like it have to vote on it here? Is that your question in committee?
I don't know that I characterize it exactly as you state. I mean, I'm happy to vote today. I just have a long-standing practice of not voting on resolutions, and I just think this is kind of maybe an end around that right of members to stick to matters of the state, and generally resolutions are telling somebody else to do something. I might characterize it as weeding other people's gardens, and so if by House rules everybody's required to vote on it because the fact that it's been put in bill form, you know, I certainly will conform to the House rules, but I just find this a little unusual.
Okay, understood, Representative Holbrook. And that being said, I don't know, Representative Scott, you wanted to consider withdrawing your request for a roll call, which may solve the problem, but if not, it's up to you. Representative Liebling.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. And Representative Holbrook, I think you're raising a really valid, important concern here, but I think two things might help with that. One is that, and I don't know what the process usually is to get a resolution to the floor. I think that's kind of the question here, but I don't think there's a rule that in committee members have to vote. So I think even on a roll call, if you pass, I've never seen in committee where anybody says, wait a minute, you can't pass. So I think that's, you know, I know we're not required to vote on a resolution. I don't know why anyone would be required to vote on it here, whether there's a roll call or not. And the second thing is that the motion now is to re-refer. It's not to pass and re-refer. This has been clarified, I think, by House Research. And so even if you vote for it, you're not voting to pass it. You're just voting to send it along. So I think now it's really that only on the House floor are we actually voting yes or no on a measure. So, you know, I would just say that, you know, we should just vote on it. If it moves along, it moves along. And then when it gets to that, if you don't want to vote, I think there's nobody making you.
Well, I would add this, Representative Liebling, that, you know, roll call is requested. I mean, there's still a list of people who voted, and a person who has a moral objection to voting on resolutions could still potentially be held accountable despite that objection if the names are listed. So it potentially would solve that problem. Other questions? Representative Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move that we table this bill until we get an answer from the Chief Clerk's office.
Okay. The motion has been made to table it. I will tell you, Representative Scott, it's not my intention. Because of the sophistry that's been raised, not in a disrespectful way, but it is kind of a nuanced answer, I think we can find the answer to this between now and the time that it gets to the floor, which is, I think, where the question is directed. So, but that said, I am willing to have a vote.
And a roll call, please.
And a roll call on the tabling. Be ready to go.
Chairman
okay.
Lesh
votes no.
Vice Chair Ellen?
No.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Hellstrom?
No.
Representative Holbrook?
Yes.
Representative Portman?
No.
Representative Powell?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Liebling?
No.
Representative Neuberger?
No.
Representative Paymar?
No.
Representative Pugh? Representative Rosenthal?
No.
Representative Simon?
No.
Representative Scott?
Yes.
Representative Winkler?
No.
Representative DeRusso?
No.
On a vote of 3 to 13, the motion does not prevail. Representative Scott, Mr. Gehring is going to find out some more information on this. And I think what we'll do now is... Okay, the chair will temporarily lay it over. We'll be taking it up later in the same hearing. But for now, we're going to move to the booking photograph practices provisions. So, Representative Dean, if you and your testifier can take a seat, we're going to do some background work on this. And thank you for coming forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton and Representative Myra. Okay. So, Representative Norton, if you can speak, the chair will move House File 1940 to be referred to Public Safety Finance, and go ahead on yours first, and then we will have the testifiers after both you and Representative Myra have spoken to your bills. So go ahead to your bill.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, members, for hearing this important piece of legislation. Many states are grappling with the issue that I'm bringing you today, and some folks out there are calling it online mugshot extortion. I did a little research over the summer, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. This particular issue was brought to me by a constituent who was charged with a DUI. The charges were ultimately dropped. Months later, he received a call from a family member saying that he was considered a felon online. He was understandably upset. He contacted the company and was informed that for $500, they would be quite happy to take his mugshot down off the website. And then he got frustrated and worried. He started saying, well, if I pay them the $500, will it show up in another website in a week or a month or a year? And in fact, that is what's happening across the country. And so he was reticent to pay. Also worried that if he did pay, how was he guaranteed once the check was sent in, sometimes to that same company, sometimes to other companies, would the mugshot actually be taken down, and who would help him enforce that? And as someone with lower income, he was concerned about being able to afford this at all, let alone afford what could be a very long and ongoing expense for him. So in frustration, he contacted me. You know, as far as I can tell, with this particular issue, there's the expression there, and it's kind of ugly, but there are many ways to skin a cat, and some of them are pretty messy. And I was a little nervous about getting into this. This committee is a little intimidating anyway, I hate to say it, but it's a little, makes me a little nervous to even be here on an issue that I'm not an expert on. But I did work with staff, two or three of the members of staff over the interim. And they looked, as I did, at what other states are doing and found that many of them were running into problems, particularly with First Amendment right issues. So the staff helped me put the language together. I'm going to be the first one to tell you right up front, I'm not an attorney. I never really wanted to be an attorney. And I'm so glad some of you do. So I am coming to you with what I think is a very important issue and asking for your help and the help of folks out there to find the right language so that we can once and for all help the constituents out there who are really being extorted to, I mean, I know that's a legal term and some of you get nervous about that, but in my mind as a civilian, they are. So I just, within the last 24, 48 hours, received some whispers in the ears that some groups had concerns. I think they're minor. I've told all of them I'm willing to work with them between now and the next hearing to add some tweaks in here that might address the issues, and the issues that have been raised are access and paperwork issues. They're a little worried about the onerousness of the language at the department and having to deal with the issue. And then also access to media. And I think the media in particular is a very potentially easier fix than the other. But I'm hoping that the expertise around this table can help me make certain that we can forward a bill that'll really do something to help these people. So with that, you have the bill before you, and I know Representative Myra has a bill, and maybe we can let her speak. I did not ask my constituent to come up. He's been through enough publicly and doesn't want to put his face out there yet again in what was a very embarrassing situation. So if I needed to have him, I probably could, but I chose to give him a break, and I did not ask him to come up to testify.
Thank you, Representative Norton. And members, we're going to hold off on questions until after the testifiers have come up to speak. Do I have a motion for Representative Myra's House File 1933?
I'll
Representative
move that
Scott
bill.
Moves House File 1933. Representative Myra, I want you to go ahead and speak to your bill. Then we will have, if the testifiers can be prepared to come up and speak to that immediately after Representative Myra has finished speaking, we'll hear from them and then take questions from the committee. To your bill, Representative Myra.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate your willingness to hear my bill. I'm bringing this forward based on a meeting with a constituent. It actually was their whole family. A young teenager found her mom's mugshot online, and it was very upsetting, and they attempted to remove that mugshot. Very difficult situation. Extortion does come to my mind, and I am also not an attorney, so I don't know the legal ramifications of that word, but very concerned, and that's why I'm bringing forward this bill. The bill seeks to prevent these companies, these individuals, typically in China, other countries, who are putting these mugshots online, asking for large sums of money, and then taking the pictures down, but then putting them up on other websites. And I have heard in the last few days a number of concerns, just as you have. I had heard before I had this bill drafted that Hennepin County already follows the same protocol as what's laid out in my bill. I had heard from other sheriffs that the primary concern was the bookkeeping and the staff time. I was hoping that by allowing an amount of money that would reimburse the county for the expense, that would make up for it. But I have heard a lot of concerns in the last day, and so I I would like to hear the testimony, and then I don't know if it would be appropriate to lay it aside and work on it before it goes forward. But I would be happy to listen to the testimony that of the individuals, both pro and con.
Thank you. If we could have Patrick Hines, Mark Anfinson, and Jim Franklin come forward, be prepared to testify. Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to understand your intent, and I got pulled out here for a second, so I don't know if I missed it, but is it your intent that this not go to the Data Practices Subcommittee? Or
what? That's a great question.
I mean, there are some real nuances to this, and I don't think we have a perfect product in either bill at this point, and it's a balancing act issue, and I just would like to know what your intent is.
The intention is this move to public safety finance, and then it come back here to be included in a data omnibus bill. So we will have possession of this before it moves to the floor. Representative Holbrook.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, given the time constraints, et cetera, would you object if the Data Practices Subcommittee wanted to take a look at this in another hearing to allow more time? Or
Representative Holbrook, I do not think that based upon bill deadlines we're going to have time to move it to a subcommittee. I think it's going to be the entire civil law committees that's going to be considering it this year, just based on timelines.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead. If you can start, Mr. Hines, please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Patrick Hines with the League of Minnesota Cities. We understand the concerns that Representative Norton and Representative Myra have, and we certainly don't think there's a good public policy reason for people to be using mugshots to get money from people. We do have some concerns with the way that the bill is drafted, in particular with House File 1940, Representative Norton's bill. It does require the police departments or the sheriff's departments to request additional information when people are asking for mugshots. Contrary to how Data Practices Act usually goes, which creates some potential for confusion and violation of the act, we also note that collecting that information, it doesn't appear to prevent the people from using the mugshots any way they want. They could simply state on a letter that they wanted to use the mugshot to extort money from someone, and the police department would collect that and then give them the mugshot anyway. And so, you know, we are concerned about the extra paperwork, the fact that people will now be requesting the requests for these mugshots from agencies, and anytime we have to do something affirmatively under statute, there's a chance that there'll be a mistake made, and then the department will have violated the Data Practices Act. So those are our concerns. We've reached out to Representative Norton, Representative Myra. We're happy to work with them to try to fashion a bill that would alleviate our concerns and address the very valid concerns they have.
Thank you. If members could hold off on their questions for Mr. Hines until each of the testifiers have spoken, and just if you have questions for different testifiers, make a list and they'll be available for afterwards. Mr. Anfinson, please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Mark Anfinson, attorney for the Minnesota Newspaper Association. I can also say that I'm speaking, echoing the sentiments of the Minnesota Broadcasters Association on these two bills as well. Historically, mugshots have been available to the news media. And on occasion, as you all know, news organizations will display the mugshots, often for good public policy reasons. So these two bills could potentially interfere with that. And that is the source of our concern. However, I have talked to both of the authors, and they're both very amenable to trying to navigate these difficult issues. Representative Myra and Representative Norton and the chair have all correctly identified as being present here. So I think with some effort we can get this right, and I will not belabor our concerns. I'm confident that will happen. I would simply say Winston Churchill once said in a speech to Congress that the great thing about Americans is that they always do the right thing. And then he paused and he said, after exhausting every other possibility. And so I what we're going to try and do here is not exhaust every other possibility. This is a difficult issue, but it's a legitimate concern that the authors have raised. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Amundson. Mr. Franklin, please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, Jim Franklin, Executive Director for Minnesota Sheriffs, speak today on behalf of the sheriffs and also the Association of Minnesota Counties. I will try not to belabor and duplicate the points that have already been made, of which we concur with. We also support where we're trying to get, and the authors of this, we do believe this is a problem. We want to try to find a solution. But we do have great concerns over the data collection, the storing, the duplication of the data, and you must understand we share customers, especially in the sheriffs where we do booking. So it's not uncommon for a customer of ours to come through one jail tonight, another one next week, and another one, and we're going to be duplicating this data. And so as we collect it, and I won't belabor those points, we have to ask the question, this is an unfunded mandate for local units of government, why are we duplicating this 87 times with 87 counties and 300 police departments? We've got to find a better solution. My military commander always told me, don't bring me a problem, bring me a solution. So let me try to bring you what I think may be a possible solution. Currently in Minnesota, at the BCA, we have something called MRAP. That's the Minnesota Repository of Arrest Photos. That MRAP photo is downloaded, put together for a collection, and this may be a repository point for collection and dissemination of this type of data if we want to track it in that much detail, so at least the local units of government are not duplicating and we have a repository by which to work from. So with that, I'll conclude my remarks.
Thank you. Ms. Carmen McQuitty, if you would please come forward and offer your remarks.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Carmen McQuitty. I'm an attorney at the University of Minnesota Student Legal Service. Some of you have seen my face before in the off session. We've been doing some work through the expungement working group on the issue, so I appreciate you letting me speak today. I appreciate the work that's been done, but I'd like to throw another wrinkle in. Things have changed drastically since we first started working on mugshots. There was a class action lawsuit, I believe in Ohio, that was settled. And what the mugshots companies are doing now, they are not offering people to pay money any longer to take the mugshot down. So if you go on right now on your smartphone or anything, that's no longer an option. So my concern is that while I appreciate the legislation, I feel like we're chasing something that doesn't exist in its current form. And now the companies, I mean, we've sort of created this problem because we wanted to address it. So they're saying, fine, you can't take it down unless you can prove that your case has been dismissed. The way they're now getting their money, because obviously this is still a money-making entity, is that they're selling ads on their page, and they're just getting traffic and views for those ads. So I'm hopeful that, and of course this opens up a much bigger can of worms in terms of media, data practices, where the documents are stored. But I think what I would propose is legislation that actually gives the sort of a tool for civil litigation that makes it a crime, or not a crime, but potentially a civil penalty for a company or another entity to profit from the image of another. I know that's broad. And that potentially we could include language that would allow there to be a person could actually sue the company. So nothing criminal, but I just wanted to make you all aware that at this point there's no longer, the companies aren't extorting anymore. They're just not taking the photos down. So I think the issue has changed a little bit. So.
Thank you for your comment, Ms. McQuitty. Representative Norton and Representative Myra, if you could come forward again and entertain questions from the committee members. And committee members, if you have questions for a specific testifier, either Mr. Hines, Mr. Amundson, Mr. Franklin, or Ms. McQuitty, please notify them so they can make their way down here and answer the questions. Questions from members. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Franklin, where did he go?
Right here. He's coming down. Go ahead with your question.
I have a question for you. You mentioned that this is an unfunded mandate to counties and so forth, but can't the sheriff charge for those photos?
Mr. Franklin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scott, In one bill, yes. In a different bill, no. The question would be the amount and then the cost of having staff put all of that together and whether or not the fee that would be charged would offset the actual cost of collecting and putting all this data together. And at this point, we don't know exactly how all that will work out.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Who said that?
Pam Myra.
Yes, Representative Myra.
I am sorry. There is an individual from the public that wanted to come in support of my bill. Okay. Would there be an opportunity for him to talk?
I don't know. It's getting pretty tight. It depends on how long they talk, but have them make their way down here. Representative Howe has a question for you, Mr. Franklin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Franklin, most of the stuff that I see here is they're looking after that if a subject of a booking photo was not convicted of a crime, they have to delete it. Isn't it quite often, if you can help me, that some folks that have been previously booked and convicted of a different crime, and now they're, or maybe they've been booked but not convicted, but now have skipped bail, they're on the run. Don't you use that booking photo to search for these people?
Mr. Chairman, Representative
Franklin,
the answer to your question is yes, and there's multiple parts here. Number one, you may be booked and or charged with multiple charges. As I referred to, you have multiple cases in multiple counties with some of our best customers. And number three, yes, some of them abscond, and we have to go and use those photos for tracking and all other kinds of purposes, of which appear on a number of networks of wanted persons. So we have quite a mix here that we're talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how do we separate those that haven't been convicted and are innocent from those that have yet to go to court? And how do we separate the wheat from the chaff? None of them have been convicted, but some of them haven't even gone to court yet. Some of them might get dismissed. Some of them are still wanted. I'm not sure how to separate these folks from these bills. I guess I'm concerned if they've never been convicted, but some of them have never gone to court. We haven't found them yet. I'm a little concerned.
Mr. Franklin?
Mr. Chairman, as I understand the bills, they would be removed after conviction. It is not that they're removed prior to conviction. And again, back to your point, Representative, it's going to take a lot of staff time to work with the courts to get the data to ensure the accuracy of the records from the courts and going through all of these steps. So there will be significant amounts of staff time to ensure the accuracy as we go through this process.
I would note, Representative Howe, this has been ongoing. Your question raises a sticky situation that has been dealt with by members of this body for years. There was a prior member of this body who was arrested for DWI, and within 36 to 48 hours, the news media had the dash cam video of the entire scenario. It had personal information regarding any personal health problems. I was shocked to see that and remain disturbed at the fact that that kind of thing could go on. That said, there's also an ongoing tradition of open information. So your question gets right to that point that we're going to have to deal with. Representative Norton, did you want to be heard on this?
Well, I was just going to say, we're not trying to restrict access to the photos. We're trying to restrict inappropriate use of the photos for people that charge. So it's not stopping the photos from going out there, and I know there are other concerns with that. This is just saying that if you're using it to for financial purposes, and I would agree the technology is changing so fast that people are starting to remove the photos as quickly or not charge and have another company charge, and there's a variety of other things. But if we make it so that someone has to go through an effort to do this, if you're doing it for the public good to make people aware, you can still do that. The only thing we're stopping is the extortion of funds to remove the photo. And frankly, I don't think there's going to be ownership or an onerous process for the courts, because it's only upon request. So it really, the person whose picture is out there has to be the one requesting it. We're not expecting the police to track down whose photos are being used correctly or not. It's really up to the consumer to find that information, which is why we want them to collect the data so you know if someone's bought your or asked for your data. If you've been found innocent, you have a way to go back and say, who's asked us access this, and can I ask them to take it down because I was found innocent? We need a tracking
Thank you,
process.
Representative Norton. And we have a couple other questions. I would note, members, that this is going to be referred. Mm-hmm. The motion is not a recommendation to pass. These bills will be referred to Public Safety Finance, after which they will be referred back here for consideration in an omnibus data bill. So if you have some questions that could be resolved between now and that time, please utilize that time. I'm thinking about the time we want to take up on Representative Dean's bill as well. Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representatives Norton and Meyer. I, too, have two constituents, one that was charged and dismissed, one that was found not guilty. And his mugshot was on many websites. And my question is to Mr. Franklin, how would your solution satisfy my constituents' concerns?
Mr. Franklin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, in my solution, it would be a single point of tracking, entry, data collection, etc. To your particular point, found not guilty, and or if that other one was dismissed, I believe you said, that would be a request that would go directly, if that person requested that, to go down. Hopefully the company would act in responsibly and do that immediately, but it would be a centralized point of where this information would reside at MRAP, if you will, from that point, as opposed to if your constituent was arrested in two different counties, it would be two different files or two different agencies involving potentially that photo if it was uploaded twice as opposed to once. And then you have the issue of which photo is appearing on the screen. Is it the Dakota County photo or the Hennepin photo?
Any other questions? Oh, Rips of Leaving.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just quickly, I'm kind of, first of all, thank you both for tackling this, because, I mean, I think we're all concerned about this. There's no question about it, and it's great that you've tried to do something about it. I found the testimony from Ms. McQuitty, I think it was?
Ms. McQuitty.
Very compelling. I mean, if it seems like a different solution might be called for, and all the weeds that were in here kind of are sort of based on the initial problem, which maybe we've moved off of now. It seems to me that if a private for-profit entity is using somebody's photos to make a profit, that they ought to be held to figure out, you know, they ought to be held to the standard of making sure that, in fact, it's not a person, you know, that it really is somebody who's been convicted. So I think that putting it on them and in by way of a civil penalty mm-hmm. and is something that we really ought to wrestle with, what that process should look like. And then we can kind of get out of the weeds of all of this interfering with other proper uses of the information. So that would just be my suggestion. And I'd just like to know if the authors are thinking along those lines, and maybe we don't have to try to untangle this from the way that it's written in these bills.
Okay. Representative Norton, Representative Meyer, if you can just give a quick up or down or whether you're thinking along the same lines, that I'd like to move on for action on the other bill. Go ahead.
I'm certainly open to anything, any opportunities. We do have some liabilities in here, and whatever it takes to stop these websites from taking advantage of people, I'm open to considering. So if you have suggestions, bring them forward, and I've already told the folks who testified I'm willing to work with them to see if we can't find something that's amenable to everyone, or at least as many as possible.
Thank you, Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm concerned a little bit about it because a lot of these companies and individuals are not in the United States. Mm. They are offshore, and what can we do? How can we go after them? So it might not be a good answer.
Okay, final question, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel badly that a person from the public came here to testify today and that we're not hearing them. Oh, they left?
I met them earlier, and I guess they've left the room, so I'm sorry not to hear from them as well.
They can be there. That's all I wanted to.
Okay, thank you. Well, members, we'll take action first on Representative Norton's House File 1940. The motion is, to be clear, that it be referred, simply referred to Public Safety Finance. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. Then taking up House File 1933, Representative Myra's bill, the motion is to refer it to Public Safety Finance. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no.
No.
Motion passes. Thank you, Representative Norton, Representative Myra, and for the testifiers for coming here today. Chair will take... Going back to House File 2017 as amended, Representative Dean, first testifier we have goes to the previous question. What's that? Thank you. Senate File 17. First testifier is Mr. Mark Shepard from House Research, who can speak to the previous question raised by Representative Holberg. Representative Holberg, do you want to restate your question of concern to be clear for Mr. Shepard?
Oh, Mr. Chair and Mr. Shepard, I was just trying to figure out the language as amended, and I'm not sure if you have. It was kind of a clunky process in the amendment, but it's my understanding that the Senate file as it existed before committee is all gone and only the language on the amendment remains. But the practice in the House of not requiring members to vote on resolutions, some have said this isn't a resolution, it's a bill. If you could kind of give us a mini refresher course here. As a member who has a long-standing tradition of not voting on resolutions, I'm wondering how this works.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, and first of all, obviously these parliamentary matters are for the chair to decide and the presiding officer on the floor of the House, and so they'll have to rule on that. But my understanding is that in committee, it has not been the custom of the House to have a call of the House or a call of the committee. So members typically aren't required to vote on bills in committee. If you chose to leave the room, you could do that, and the sergeant wouldn't bring you back in. So I think in committee, at least that's my understanding of the custom. When this matter gets to the floor of the House, then, of course, you know, typically there could be a call of the House. The House Rule 2.05 says a member is not required to vote on any matter concerning a memorial resolution. So when this bill was introduced in the Senate, it was styled as a memorial resolution, but as you've amended it here today, it's not. It's styled, I think, correctly as a joint resolution under your amendment. I looked up in the revisor's manual. The revisor's manual distinguishes between joint resolutions and memorial resolutions, and joint resolutions are, it says here, are used for four reasons. One of them is asking Congress to call a constitutional convention, and I think that may be what is here. So I think this probably is a joint resolution, not a memorial resolution, but whether, I mean, that's something that, you know, it's your rule, Rule 2.05 on the floor of the House, and the Speaker, presiding officer, will have to interpret it. That's the background that I have.
And Mr. Chair, so the fact that it's calling for a constitutional convention is the driving factor in this becoming a different kind of resolution, is to kind of boil it all down.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, I believe that's correct, and that's why I believe that even though the original Senate file styled itself as a memorial, that as this stands now, it's been changed to a joint resolution, and I think that likely is correct.
Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you ever seen the sergeant-at-arms bring a member into the House floor and make the member vote?
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and Representative Horton, I've seen when the motion is made, the sergeant is instructed to bring in the absentee members, and I have seen the sergeant go out of the chamber and ask the absentee members to come in. I don't know that I have not personally seen them forcibly.
Just curious. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The card yet.
Yeah, I was trying to learn my House of Representatives history.
You could be the first. That might be the presiding officer.
Other questions from members for Mr. Shepard? Okay. Thank you for being here to testify on that, Mr. Shepard. Other questions from members to Senate File 17 as amended? We have your testifier, yes. Representative Dean, if you can be down here. And please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Committee Chair Representative Lesh and members of the Civil Law Committee. Good morning. My name is Robin Monahan, spell M-O-N-A-H-A-N. I will be brief. I am a Minnesota volunteer for Move to Amend. I was outraged by Citizens United decision and felt the need to do something. Having been politically inert for 67 years and unsure what to do, my older brother and I agreed that we would walk across the United States to raise the awareness of people to the harm that Citizens United to raise the awareness of people to the harm that Citizens United decision does to democracy. I walked with my older brother from the Pacific to the Atlantic and had wonderful conversations with thousands of people from every political, social, and economic background. More than 99% of those people agreed that democracy is worth striving for and that Citizens United needs to be corrected. We didn't talk to any corporations. Corporations don't have conversations. Corporations aren't people. Money is not speech. When resolutions like House File 276 have been presented to voters as a referendum, in other states, the resolutions have passed every time. Every time with majorities from 76 to 85%. House File 276 has broad grassroots support for getting big money out of politics. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Monahan. Questions from members of the committee? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this can go to either the author or Mr. Monahan, the testifier. But I noticed in many of your statements, getting money out of politics and that sort of thing. I don't know if you're aware of a recent Star Tribune article that talked about the money that is in politics and how the labor unions by far exceed donations or contributions at all by corporations. And so I wonder if you could address that and then show me where in this amendment that this same, in this bill now, I guess, where this would apply to labor unions as well.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, this doesn't totally take money out of politics and out of campaigns. What this does is this takes this into the purview of legislative bodies to determine what are the rules around which money can be part of our elections. If you look at 1.20, it says that the privileges of the artificial entities shall be determined by the people through federal, state, or local law and shall not be construed to be inherent or inalienable. So this applies to labor unions as well. I mean, we can determine laws that will determine how much money and how transparent that money has to be when it comes into elections. That's what we do as lawmakers. So this would allow us the opportunity to do that. So whether it's private individuals or whether it's a labor union or whether it's corporations, we would set the rules by which that money would come into elections.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I notice on, because we're working off of, oh, let's see, no, we're working off of this one, right?
A12 amendment as well.
Okay, on line 1.15 of the A12, it says of natural persons only. Have labor unions ever been found as natural persons?
Representative Dean.
I'm not a legal scholar. I don't know, but I'm guessing they probably have not been found to be a natural person.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Okay, seeing none, then the motion. Okay, so the motion is to refer Senate File 17 as amended to the floor. All in favor? Did you ask for a roll call?
I did.
Okay. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chairman Lesh.
Aye.
Vice Chair Ellen.
Aye.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Hellstrom.
Aye.
Representative Holborn.
No.
Representative Hortman.
Aye.
Representative Howe.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Liebling.
Yes.
Representative Neuberger.
No.
Representative Paymar.
Aye.
Representative Pugh. Representative Rosenthal.
Yes.
Representative Simon.
Yes.
Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Winkler. Representative DeRusso.
Aye.
On a vote of 9-6, the motion does prevail. Thank you very much,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dean. Okay, members, our next meeting will be Friday, February 28th at 10 o'clock, and they gave us room 5 with the uncomfortable chair, so bring your pillow.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering how many other Friday meetings we're going to have and if we could get a little more notice. I know a lot of us work on Fridays, our other jobs, and so it's kind of, this was sort of short notice that that was going to happen.
Okay, so I'm being told that we have scheduled the 14th and the 21st, Representative Scott, and if we can get through the rest of these bills in a timely order and we can cancel, it's possible we can cancel. It's possible that we could cancel one of those two. If that's the case, now I'm on notice that if other members are working, that I get enough advance notice on those so that I can tell you, hey, by the way, check in with the boss and say, you know, you don't have to say I can't be there kind of thing. So that's the information I have for you right now. Thank you. There being no other... Oh, yeah, thank you. Okay, members, I wanted to introduce to you our committee page, Fu Lee. Where's Mr. Lee? Mr. Lee right there. Could you just say a couple things about yourself, tell committee members about you?
Well, my name is Fu Lee, and I'm a recent graduate of Carleton College from North Minneapolis.
All right, excellent. Thanks for being here. Get used to them. There being no other business before the committee is adjourned.